T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mitch Keller, another 2-2 offering, another curveball, and it's driven deep to left, and that is going to be way out of here. Looked like it perhaps cleared a big logo, a medallion, above the left center field wall that says MLB Little League Classic. This ball hit in the air the other way. Back is Reynolds toward the track, and it is gone. An opposite field line drive home run that just cleared the fence in left. It is 2-0 Cubbies. 18th home run for Hayward.
Well, I thought he showed some of the things that we were looking to see and we want to continue to see, and I think he showed us some opportunities. There's still some growth and there's still some finishing the pitches we've got to work on. Fastball, I thought, played really well up early. The secondary stuff was inconsistent for the most part.
Not great, obviously, giving up runs and not giving our team a chance to win.
Greg Brown with the calls. Clint Hurdle with the analysis, Mitch Keller with the self-deprecation or the honest self-evaluation. And it all contributed to a 7-1 Pirates loss, dropping them to 7-27 post-All-Star break to the Cubs yesterday in Williamsport, where the Pirates were about as futile as you would imagine a Little League team would have been offensively, and about as inept as you would imagine a Little League team would have been in terms of their pitching. It's the PM team, and that's What's on Tap, brought to you by Fatheads 15 Packs, now available in Sunshine, Daydream, and Bumbleberry. 7-27 since the All-Star break. Eric Hagman put it differently. They've lost 27 of 34 since the All-Star break. No matter what kind of semantics you want to use, the Pirates have been miserable. But hey, yesterday was supposed to be the kind of day that you, at least in the midst of all of this losing, of all of this futility, yesterday was supposed to be the kind of day that you looked forward to, because hope for the future was supposed to be on the mound. Hope for the future in the form of Mitch Keller. And yet, probably unsurprisingly to many of you, it didn't come to pass that way, where hope for the future showed a little flash in the present. Mitch Keller was bad yet again. He has been mostly bad as a starter. He gets his first win last time out, but the man's ERA is 8.86 in 5 starts. And yesterday wasn't one of those first inning blow-ups like he's had, but it was a steady trickle of the wheels falling off. Mitch Keller didn't look, even a little bit, like the kind of guy that can carry a pitching staff, like the kind of guy that could be a major force on the mound for a team that contends. Mitch Keller looked like a massive work in progress. That's what he looked like. That's what he has looked like. That would actually be a charitable description of the Pirates as a franchise right now, a massive work in progress. They look like a team that has completely cratered. They look like a rudderless franchise. And it's very difficult for me to conceive at this point in time of any kind of rosy turnaround scenario. And Neil Huntington spoke at length yesterday in his weekly radio show, and the comments that he made certainly made waves. And we're going to be hearing a lot of them, talking about a lot of them today on the show. We're going to talk a lot about Antonio Brown, who apparently is back with the Raiders for a team meeting. No word on whether he showed up late. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk will join us at 4 o'clock to break down that entire saga, because he's had an interesting perspective on it. But the Pittsburgh Pirates are impossible to look away from, actually, right now. Joe Ross and Trevor Williams tonight, and if you're being honest with yourself, you've got to feel like there's almost no way the Pirates win this baseball game. We're how many hours away? 5 from that game starting? You probably already have the feeling like, well, this is fait accompli. This one's going downhill. They have surpassed apathy I think, and have moved into a realm where they have been so inept, so unable to get anything positive going other than two wins in a row over the Anaheim Angels. I'm sorry, the Los Angeles Angels of Mike Trout, as we call them on this show. They have been so inept that they have passed apathy, the exit sign for apathy, and moved right on into full-blown can't-look-away status for all the wrong reasons. Mitch Keller being laid, like, it was a perfect microcosm yesterday of everything that's wrong with them. The present's bad, and we know that. And there seems to be, like, mild denial, if not stronger than mild denial, about how bad it is. And yesterday was supposed to be one of those times where you put away all the ill feelings that have developed, that have festered for the last month plus, and just sat there and watched Mitch Keller cook. And hopefully, he was going to pitch a good game. Maybe the Pirates were going to lose, but if they had lost 2-1 with Keller going seven strong innings like Brault did against the Cubs earlier in the previous game of the series, maybe you'd have understood it. You'd have said, all right, that's what I want to see from Mitch Keller. I want to see this guy look like he's next. Instead, you got nothing. Instead, you got more bad. A good Mitch Keller start would have only briefly stemmed the tide, and even it wouldn't have even required the Pirates to win the game, but they couldn't even get that. Mitch Keller's supposed to be part of the cavalry for next year. People that are out there, that, and I don't know who they are outside of the organization, that are still looking with hope towards 2020, like it's going to be a massive turnaround year. Don't worry, this too shall pass. 2012 was abysmal, but look what happened in 2013. Mitch Keller's one of the guys they were counting on. Mitch Keller was somebody who was supposed to have the stuff to be a true frontline guy in Major League Baseball. I heard him multiple times by multiple different people compared favorably to either of the next two big hyped Pirates pitching prospects in recent vintage, which would be post-Garrett Cole, I'm talking, which is Jameson Taillon and Tyler Glasnow. Oh, Keller's got more polish. Oh, Keller's stuff plays more. Keller's this, Keller's that. He's nothing right now. If you watch that game and saw a pitcher who looks like when next season starts, he's going to help them be kind of instantly transformed, like he's going to give the pitching staff a makeover by his mere presence, you were watching a different guy than I was. You've got to believe that on the heels of a game like last night, that just when you take all of this in sum, nobody is rooting harder for the start of Steelers season than the Pirates brass. Because with every mounting loss, they get closer and closer to having basically one of the worst post-All-Star breaks in Major League history, maybe the worst, with no relief in sight, and only another sport kind of there to distract people as kind of your respite. This isn't how it was supposed to be either. And remember, this was a team, and that's what makes this the most, I think that's the most bitter part of all of this. This was a team that was supposed to contend. If Mitch Keller was coming up and pitching in August, I really believe in their hearts, Neil Huntington, Frank Coonerly, Bob Nutting, Clint Hurdle, all believe that he would be coming up to help a team that was in the throes of a playoff race, whether it was for the NL Central or a wild card spot. People thought if Mitch Keller was having starts in mid-August, they were going to be high pressure, but they were going to be fun because he was going to be the young kid, the ace of the future, getting thrown into it, a la Garrett Cole in 2013, where Cole blossomed really in the bat, you know, once he got going that year, his first year, and became their best pitcher by the end of it. He and Francisco Liriano. That was supposed to be what this was. Not Mitch Keller in a little league ballpark, basically, in a little league town, in a minor league ballpark, giving up a couple of home runs and sounding like a man out of answers. Keller's a man of few words. We've had him on this show and asked to describe, I'll just read it here. Stephen Nesbitt wrote a story about it. Asked to describe the start, quote, not great, obviously, giving up runs and not giving the team a chance to win, end quote. If the team was, let's just spitball a number here. If the team was 17-17 post-break, they'd still be vaguely in the race. And you'd hear a comment like that or read a comment like that from Mitch Keller and say, ah, go get him next time. Team's not going to fall out of it. Now it just feels like a cherry on top of just a plethora of failures. No relief. No, hey, let's forget about how bad this has been. Look, it's Mitch Keller starting. He compounded their woes. Oh, and by the way, to not help Mitch Keller at all, the team still hasn't gotten a hit with runners in scoring position in over 20 at-bats, over their last 21. Team's rotation for the post-All-Star portion of the year, 6.09. Starters, ERA. I don't know. Where do you go from here if you're the Pirates? Understandably, the general manager is sounding off in a much more positive tone. Joe Musgrove was saying some things, took the time earlier, a couple days ago, to deliver sort of a message to his teammates. It's not over. We have things to play for. There's still positives. There's still things to be extrapolated from this season. You can't just throw in the towel. But the play on the field makes it seem like they have. Mitch Keller also went on to say in the Steven Nesbitt story, quote, I'm thankful for every shot I get up here. I need to be better and use these experiences to hopefully help me along the way in my career. Hopefully we'll get some more wins. Why bother with the wins at this point? Why root for them? Just going to push them artificially lower into the first round next year's draft. And the Pirates need all the help they can get, whoever the GM might be by that point. I'll still bet Neil Huntington. They need to have the widest possible talent pool available to them whenever they select. 7-1. 7 wins in 34 games after the All-Star break. At some point, you run out of words to describe the actual action on the field, and that's very near the point that I'm at. I watched last night's game. I don't know about the rest of you. I did. I watched it. And about the only conscious thought I had, because it was all just kind of pictures on a screen that I didn't take any meaning from, was, wow, those field mics are picking up the bat cracking very loudly. Like you knew when a home run was being hit. That's about all I got. The Steelers preseason game was not more interesting than the Pirates game, but it was close. And you should never be saying that about preseason football versus August baseball. If your team is any good in baseball, you should never be saying that a preseason game even comes close. But they were neck and neck. And if the Steelers had had more interesting stuff happen in that game, it would have surpassed it. You can text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line, 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. Where are we at today? One of my favorite spots, Redbeard's downtown, Redbeard's on 6th Street. Len and his people here are awesome. The food's awesome. Beer selection also fantastic. We're in a great place. I saw some Washington Nationals fans jumping into an Uber around town. So they're here expecting good things to happen for their team. And frankly, can you blame them? I can't. So come on down here, Redbeard's downtown on 6th Street. We'll talk a little shop. We'll talk about computer simulations. What else are we going to talk about? I don't know, maybe a lot of things to celebrate, a lot of reasons to celebrate. There were things said by Neil Huntington this weekend that defied belief, and we are going to catalog them all. What are we going to do coming up next, though? Tell you how to make the preseason better, because as bad as preseason football is, one game this past weekend actually captured my attention. I'll tell you why coming up next. Live from Redbeard's, Andrew Filippone. He's back tomorrow, I promise you. It's the PM team on the Fan. Yeah, it is getting to be football season, except preseason football is an atrocity, an affront to God and man. If you sat there, you know what I did. You want to know what's the greatest, $100 I've ever spent in my career? I purchased the NFL Game Pass, where you can go back, you can do the whole condensed games, you could do the coaches film, you could do all that stuff. Buying that for $100 every year, which boils down to, what, $8 a month? For the entire, and you get it for an entire year. You can go back if you're a masochist and go watch games that happened the previous season. Is the single greatest thing I've ever done, because during the preseason, you skip watching the game, you forget about it on your DVR, and you go watch the game in 35 minutes with all the crap in between taken out. However, there is one thing that if I had done that for Rams Cowboys, I would have missed. And it was the best thing I've seen in a preseason game in a very long time. Sean McVay, boy genius, 33-year-old head coach. Now, I'm 34. I'd like to believe I've accomplished almost as much as Sean McVay in a similar amount of time on the planet. But Sean McVay, big offensive savant, the Gruden kind of coaching tree, calls plays at the line for Jared Goff, exploits the NFL's play clock rules for helmet communication, all that stuff. If he had had a better game plan, he might be a Super Bowl champion already, might have upset the apple cart on Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl last year. So what you're about to hear is this. And by the way, it's the PM team, live at Redbeard's on 6th Street downtown, so you should come and visit. Andrew Filippone back in the saddle tomorrow. What you're about to hear is this. As you know, local affiliates carry most preseason games, pretty much just about all of them. You hear Pomp and Charlie Batch here, KDKA-TV, and that's how it is in most towns. With the exception of a handful of games that get a little bit of a national broadcast treatment, that's what you're getting, and those are rare. So you've got the local crews. In many cases, by the way, those local crews have guys, you'll hear familiar voices, guys who do NFL games for CBS or for Fox, will be broadcasting their, you know, the team that is where they live, because it's a nice little warm-up to the season. So it's the preseason for them, too. You also get to do stuff for a telecast that you would never be able to pull off in a regular season game because of how anal retentive all these coaches are, how intense they are during the games. You know, you have, like, little chats with the manager in a baseball game. It's not like that. The head coach in the NFL is intimately involved in the details of most every play. So Sean McVay, big offensive savant, is on the headset, and he's already done a couple of minutes with the local crew for the Rams, for Rams Cowboys. He's already done a couple minutes breaking down a defensive series for the Rams, couple of plays. And it was fine. It was, like, not overly detailed, but it was still the coach reacting to something in real time. Listen to this, and all I'll tell you is that the play on the field, of course, as you would hope, matched this description perfectly. Listen to how behind the curtain cool it is to hear Sean McVay in a preseason game detail what the Rams are going to do, even for a single play.
We got bonus coverage here with Rams head coach Sean McVay down on the sideline. He was only going to join us on the headset when the defense was on the field. We're going to get one play here with the offense. What do we got here?
You know what? It's been a good day to be able to change the launch point a little bit. I think we're going to start out with a little bootleg, fake the wide zone, and keep it out of a slot formation right here. So we're going to fake to the left right here, and we're going to keep back to the short field. We'll see if we can get something to pop or some of these crossing routes. So we're going to motion over here to create a one-back slot look. Fake hard to the left right here. Keep back to the short field. All right, we got pressure. Outstanding job by Brandon Allen right there. Finding a way to get us out of that down, get efficient yards, man. We're right on track where we want to be, and that was a tough play to execute when you get that pressure off the edge. Great job by him there.
Kendall Blanton gets 8 yards. Sean, we cannot thank you enough for doing this. How about doing it for the week one in Carolina?
You know the answer to that, my man. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sean. Right.
I love that. Courtesy of the Rams Twitter feed, actually, right there, posting that little clip. It was awesome. That's what people want, a peek behind the curtain. These games don't mean anything. These coaches run their most vanilla stuff. Make every single one of them do what Sean McVay did there, at least once a game. It should have to happen. I mean, it's up to the broadcast crew and the coach to make it sound good. But come on, make it a little bit of an incentivized thing. Can't you imagine Bill Belichick being brought onto the headset to maybe call, like, a defensive play? And
all right, so what we're trying to do here is stop the ball. We don't want him to get positive yardage. All right, here's the snap. Yeah, that's a good play by our guys. That's about a 1 yard gain. So we're going to be happy with 2nd and 9. All right, thanks, guys. Back to you.
Like, I want to hear it. I want to hear Mike Tomlin doing Tomlinisms. Doing, like, a well, obviously, there are 11 grown men on each side of the ball here. I want to hear all that stuff. Give me more of this. The preseason sucks. That is a way to make it suck a little bit less. Make sure you join the PM team on the Primanti Brothers World Tour. You grab your passport at any of the locations when us, the PM team, is there. and you get it stamped at least four locations for your chance to win a trip to Florida. Visit 93.7 The Fan's contest page for the dates, locations, and all the details. Excited for the next one of those, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Where are we today? On the road with the PM team. We're at Redbeard's on 6th Street downtown. Come by, say hi, grab a bite. Grab a brew, get ready for a little Bucks Nationals, which admittedly might cause you to have two brews. Don't really blame you in that case, unless you're a Nationals fan, in which case you're probably feeling very confident. Up next, I said the preseason sucks, and it does. I wasn't lying. But I did find one player in Steelers-Chiefs on the Steelers side of things, actually two players, that I was, believe it or not, pretty encouraged by. I'm going to tell you who they were coming up next. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fans, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Locations, North Huntington and the North Hills. In 20 minutes, oh man, where do I even begin? In 20 minutes, there were many quotes from Pirates general manager Neil Huntington on his weekly radio show yesterday, heard right here on 93.7 The Fan, that made my eyebrows raise and made me question whether I was hearing things correctly or having some sort of an acid trip. But we will have the first of those clips for you and a lot to say about it in 20 minutes. In an hour and 20 minutes, top of the 4 o'clock hour, Pro Football Talk founder Mike Florio. He has had, I think, a pretty interesting series of posts, perspective on the ongoing Antonio Brown saga, and I actually wanted to have him on. We're fortunate to be able to have him on to give a little bit of detail on both why Antonio Brown might be as upset as he seems about this and what recourse the Raiders have, including like a nuclear option, if Antonio Brown continues to throw a fit about a helmet. Right now, though, I did see, I told you, if you're smart, and you, well, you have a job in sports. Otherwise, if you don't have a job in sports, don't do this to yourself. Don't watch the preseason. Rely on people like me whose job is sports to tell you what happened. I'm serious. Go outside, get some sun, read a book, do anything. Whatever you got to do. Or DVR it, and if you like need to fall asleep at night, watch the games then, because they are boring. But I saw two players in the Steelers game that I felt like showed out enough that they warranted mentioning. It wasn't Devlin Hodges, don't care, Duck Dynasty, whatever they call him. He might take the third spot from Josh Dobbs just because he's sort of the next, you know, the new thing in town. And he does look poised back there, but it wasn't him. Bud Dupree, Alvin Bud Dupree, with a sack. Looked like he was fired out of a cannon, but it wasn't him. I'll start with the less surprising guy first and move on to the more surprising player second. Less surprising, but still eye-opening, was another strong game from James Washington, who caught another deep ball, who looked very comfortable running his routes, who made a nice catch on the sideline when Mason Rudolph sailed one a little bit. He went up, came down the ladder and got it after high-pointing the football and got both feet in despite being shoved towards the sideline. Andrew Filippone was tweeting like a madman during this game, like tweeting to an almost unhealthy degree. And he was saying a lot of things that I found very funny, but one of them that sort of struck a chord with me was that he called James Washington Mr. August, as in the greatest preseason wide receiver of all time through six preseason games in his career. And he's got a point there. He had a great preseason last year. Everybody said James Washington, ooh, look what they got in the second round with this guy. And then the regular season rolled around, and he was next to useless for the Steelers. The dive to nowhere in Denver, etc. However, looks leaner, looks more athletic. We've said that now for several weeks, everyone that's seen him. And putting it together for whatever reason 2 weeks in a row has me a little bit more encouraged that he's going to hit the ground running and maybe sees, if not in an official name, more or less the de facto second wide receiver spot. Now, I think they could be in good hands with Dante Moncrief, frankly. With Ben Roethlisberger throwing him the ball, I actually think they could be set up there to have three good receivers again, or one elite receiver and, or very good in Juju Smith-Schuster, and then two pretty good guys flanking him, really. But one way or the other, whether it's Moncrief, whether it's Washington, or both as the next man up, key to the Steelers' offense being good is going to be two things. One, Smith-Schuster showing that he can elevate his game and handle double teams and still produce the way that Antonio Brown did so regularly that it became routine, and you didn't even think about the fact that he was getting doubled on what felt like every possession or every play. So Smith-Schuster has that work that he has to do on his own. But the other thing that's relevant here, if and when that happens, is the James Washingtons of the world, or specifically James Washington, needs to be able to do what Smith-Schuster did when Antonio Brown was attracting all the attention, and that is produce. What made the Steelers' offense great was the fact the last 2 years, especially last year, that when Antonio Brown commanded so much defensive help, Juju Smith-Schuster made teams pay for doing it. Made them pay. And it was, which sword do you want to die by if you were the other team? Okay, you can single up Antonio Brown, good night. He's getting thrown the ball every time. And that presented a quandary. The Steelers' offense was good because they had a guy who inherently created mismatches, but they got really good at times because they had somebody that was able to take advantage of that lack of attention that he was getting. And I'm starting to wonder if James Washington, the bounce in his step, the way he's carrying himself, is realizing that that spot is open for him right now this year and is maybe starting to step into it a little bit with a little more legitimacy than we saw last year. The other, much more surprising player who showed out was, drumroll please, Artie Burns? Who, yes, looked like he was bear-hugging receivers 7 or 8 yards off the line of scrimmage on half the plays that I noticed him, but he forced a fumble. He wasn't afraid to stick his nose in there. He had a nice tackle on Tyreek Hill when Hill caught the ball at a spot on the field where even though he's hemmed in by the sideline, because it's already Burns trying to bring him down, you almost assumed that bad things were going to happen, and they didn't. And, man, Artie Burns is a long, long way away from regaining anyone's trust, I think. But we're at a point in time with him where almost any bad game becomes a burial. You feel like you're burying the dude on the depth chart. He's at a point where you have to be good every time you're given a chance. And if I were grading him, and I didn't check to see if like Pro Football Focus or anybody graded him out, if I were grading him, I would have given him a better than passing grade. I would have given him like a B, a solid B. And given that he has been an F for freaking terrible player for the majority of the last, what, two seasons, however long it's been, a B is a massive improvement. I'm certainly not saying that you should be counting on Artie Burns regaining the form of his rookie year, which was like a pretty modest thing in and of itself. He was good, but he wasn't very good. He was above average. I'm not saying that that's something you count on, but give me one or two more of these games where you look like a competent player, where maybe your confidence is returning, and maybe I'll start to believe that in a pinch in the regular season, you might not completely humiliate yourself and the team. So, yes. Right? Put this one. Take it. Time capsule it, Craig. I might never say it again, preseason, regular season, or otherwise. I thought Artie Burns had a good game. Now, we'll chisel that. Future civilizations can find it when we're buried in rubble. An archaeologist will brush it off if that position still exists and say, who was Artie Burns? Top of the hour. When the team that you built is 7-27 in their last 34 games, to go from possibly in the playoff chase to very much out of the playoff chase, 6 words you might want to avoid saying, even in context of acknowledging how bad things have been, is a lot of reasons to celebrate. And yet, those words in that sequence actually escape Neil Huntington's lips. And we're going to talk about it coming up next on the PM team.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.